Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really going deep into this world of native plant gardening.
It's a fascinating topic.
Yeah, and we're using this YouTube video by Wild Ones Ozark chapter.
Great group.
It is. It's called Native Plant Gardening 101. Very appropriate.
Yeah, very basic.
So we're gonna try and figure out, like, why are these plants so important? What do you need to, like, consider if you want to start your own garden? And, like, where do you even find these things?
Yeah, it's more involved than just going out your backyard and saying, oh, that grows here, let's put it in my garden.
Right.
A true native plant has evolved in a specific region, and it's been in that region for millennia.
Really helping the ecosystem thrive.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're not just pretty faces, right?
Yeah, no.
The video quotes John Muir.
Oh, a great quote.
It is. He said, "When we try to pick out anything by itself, we find it hitched to everything else in the universe."
Wow,
Right.
that's great.
Isn't that a great quote?
It
It
is.
shows how connected everything is.
They are the glue. They are that base of the web. They're
Yeah.
the primary producers taking that sunlight and converting it into energy that fuels the entire ecosystem.
It all comes back to those plants.
It does.
And speaking of coming back to those plants, the video mentions the decline of monarch butterflies.
Yes, a very important topic.
Yeah, and how planting milkweed can actually help them survive.
Yes, that is their host plant. That's where
Yeah.
they lay their eggs. It's the only thing that the caterpillars can eat.
So important.
So it is.
And it's not just monarchs.
Right. Countless species depend on native plants for food, shelter, raising their young.
Everything.
But it's not just a one-way street.
Right.
These plants also benefit us.
Okay, how so?
Well, they require less water,
Okay.
less maintenance,
Because they're already used to it.
because they're adapted to the local climate.
Yeah, it's like a win-win.
Exactly.
Less work for me and a happy environment.
And you get beautiful plants.
Beautiful plants. And you know what else is a win? Wild strawberries. They're so tiny, but the flavor is incredible.
I agree. I agree.
So much better than the store.
And it's free.
It is.
Yeah. And that kind of highlights that we're missing out on so much by not embracing what nature readily provides. So if you're thinking about starting your own native plant garden,
All right.
you need to first understand the plants and their needs.
So it's not just about popping them in the ground and being like, good luck.
No.
Right.
You need to consider soil, moisture, sunlight, and even soil pH.
I never would have thought about that.
Well, and here in the Ozarks, the type of bedrock can dramatically affect the soil.
Oh, really?
So, for example, if you have a glade with sandstone bedrock,
Okay.
which tends to be more acidic, it's going to support totally different plants than dolomite bedrock, which is alkaline.
So you're saying, like, the soil is different based on the rock underneath.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So the video goes into a lot of detail about this, and it mentions something called wetland indicator status.
Yeah, and it sounds really complex.
It does.
But it's a very helpful tool.
Okay.
The USDA website
Okay.
has classified plants based on their preference for wet or dry conditions.
Wow.
And you can use it to figure out if a plant loves to have its feet wet
Okay.
or prefers things on the drier side.
So this is something you could actually go and look up.
Yes, they even have a ranking system for it.
Wow, that's very helpful.
Yeah, so for instance, the white oak, which is a very common tree in this area, is classified as facultative upland,
Okay.
meaning it can tolerate some wetness,
Okay.
but it prefers the drier areas.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I know, speaking of oaks, and this
Yeah.
is something that's going to come up later,
Okay.
they're really the backbone of our ecosystem in this area.
Wow. Okay, cool.
So something to keep in mind.
We'll have to come back to that.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yes. And you know what else the video mentioned that I thought was interesting was the Diana Project.
Oh, yeah.
It's working to protect the Diana butterfly,
Yes.
which depends on violets as its host plant.
It does.
But sadly,
Sadly, it's been extirpated from this area, meaning it doesn't exist here anymore
wow, that's so sad.
because its habitat has disappeared.
Wow,
Yeah.
that's really eye-opening.
It's a powerful reminder of how interconnected everything is and
Yeah.
how much impact our choices can have on the environment.
It's true.
Yeah.
So let's talk about making some choices.
Okay.
Like, when it comes to picking the right plants for our gardens, how do we even begin?
Where do we start?
Yeah. The video breaks it down by sunlight.
Yes, that is a great starting point.
Okay.
So, for full sun areas,
Okay.
think of plants that thrive in open spaces like prairies and glades.
Okay.
Coneflowers and sunflowers are great examples.
Oh, and milkweed.
Yes, some milkweeds too.
Yeah, I love coneflowers.
Me too. They're so easy.
They just add so much color to the garden.
Yes, and they attract so many pollinators.
Yeah, and speaking of attracting pollinators, Rattlesnake Master is another good one for a sunny spot. Did you know it got its name because the flower head looks like a rattlesnake tail?
I did know that, and I always think of that when I see it.
Yeah, it's so
It's a
funny.
good way to remember it.
It is.
Yeah.
What about areas that are a little bit shadier?
So for partial shade,
Yeah.
you could consider things like wild strawberry,
Oh, yum.
shooting star, and even blue-eyed grass, which, fun fact,
Okay.
is not a grass at all. It's a type of iris. Yeah.
Really? Oh my goodness, I would never have guessed.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
So cool.
Yeah, and last summer I saw a hummingbird feeding on a cardinal flower,
Really?
which also likes partial shade.
Wow.
And it was really magical.
Oh,
Oh.
so
And
cool.
then for those truly shady spots in your garden,
Yeah.
you can consider plants like woodland phlox ferns, even a dwarf crested iris.
Okay.
All of those do really well in shady
It's
areas.
good to know
Yeah.
I have a very shady backyard.
Yeah.
So, speaking of attracting pollinators with our native plant selection,
Yes.
what are some of your top recommendations for creating a pollinator paradise?
Oh, okay. Well, you already mentioned a couple of really good ones like coneflowers
Yeah.
and milkweeds.
Yeah.
But, for those who really want to attract hummingbirds,
Okay.
there's some really show-stopping options.
Oh, like what?
Like red buckeye, Moyle cashfly, and of course, the trumpet honeysuckle.
Beautiful.
Very beautiful.
Yeah, as we're thinking about adding these plants to our garden, it's important to think about design too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The video emphasizes that.
Yeah, it's not just about randomly planting things,
No,
right?
it's about creating a cohesive and visually appealing space.
Yeah.
So think about grouping similar species together,
Okay.
layering plants of different heights,
Right.
creating intentional borders.
Like it's planned.
Yes,
No,
exactly.
okay.
It's about showcasing the beauty of native plants,
Yeah.
but also having that sense of purpose and design.
So you mentioned before some garden projects that serve a very specific ecological purpose.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit more about those?
Yeah, so for example, rain gardens are designed to collect and filter stormwater runoff,
Okay.
which helps to protect our waterways and prevent flooding.
Okay.
And then, of course, butterfly gardens
Right.
are all about providing nectar sources for the adult butterflies,
Right.
but also host plants for their caterpillars.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can't forget about those caterpillars. They
Yeah,
need to eat too.
they need to eat too.
Yeah, I love the idea of a rain garden. That's such a beautiful way to manage water responsibly.
It is.
And when it comes to butterfly gardens, the video really emphasizes the importance of providing both. You
Yes.
got to have both.
Yes. The nectar plants for food, but also host plants for the caterpillars.
Right. So if we're zooming out and thinking about the bigger picture,
Right.
it's about supporting the whole life cycle of these
Yes,
butterflies,
the entire life cycle.
which then supports the ecosystem.
Cool. Everything's so connected.
It is.
So let's talk about getting our hands on some of these native plants.
Yeah.
The video is very clear about sourcing them responsibly.
Yes.
So what do you mean by that?
Well, buying from reputable nurseries that source locally is crucial.
Okay, why is that?
Well, it makes sure that the plants are actually adapted to our climate and our specific conditions,
Right.
and that they haven't been taken from wild populations.
You don't want to just go dig them up yourself.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And I actually had a funny experience with this.
Oh, tell me.
My neighbor thought my native plant garden was a patch of weeds.
Oh,
I
no.
know.
That's so
I
funny.
know, and it made me realize that design and communication are really important, even when it comes to our own yards.
It's true. You can't
And
just assume people know what they're looking at.
exactly.
Yeah.
And another thing to be careful of is those wildflower seed mixes.
Oh, yeah, those are.
You see them everywhere.
Yeah, you see them everywhere.
Yeah. And a lot of times they contain non-native species. Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's really important to read the labels
Okay.
and make sure that you're sourcing from local vendors whenever possible.
So do your research.
Definitely.
It's encouraging, though, to see the demand for native plants growing.
Oh, absolutely.
It shows that people are becoming more aware
Yes, they are.
of their impact.
Yeah.
Speaking of resources, the video recommended some fantastic books by Doug Tallamy,
Oh, yes.
Bringing Nature Home and Nature's Best Hope.
Great books.
I need to check those out.
Yeah, Tallamy's work has been really groundbreaking in highlighting how important native plants are
Yeah.
in supporting biodiversity.
Okay.
He showed, for example, that oak trees
Yeah.
support a huge number of insect species.
Really?
Yeah. And then in turn, those insects support birds and other wildlife.
Oh, wow.
So planting an oak tree is like creating this whole ecosystem.
In your backyard.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm
Well,
definitely putting those books on my list.
yeah.
And for those who want to take their commitment to the next level, the video mentions the Wild Ones organization.
Oh, yeah, great group.
And they have this yard certification program.
They do.
So what's that about?
Yeah. So this program is a fantastic way to learn more about native plants
Okay.
and how to create a really wildlife-friendly landscape.
Okay.
And they have great resources on their website, and they have local chapters all across the country.
Oh, wow. So you could really get involved.
Yes, you can.
I love that idea of having a certified native plant garden.
Yes.
It's like a badge of honor, you know?
It is. It's showing your commitment and hopefully inspiring others to do the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And speaking of inspiring others, the video mentions this concept called homegrown national parks. So
Yes.
what's that about?
It's a fantastic initiative, encouraging individuals to create havens for wildlife in their own backyards,
Okay.
essentially creating a network of mini ecosystems
Wow.
that could rival the size and impact of our national parks.
Wow, that's amazing. Like, imagine that, a huge interconnected web
I know.
of habitat just spanning across backyards and parks and everything.
Yeah.
And it's all supporting like this thriving diversity of life.
I know, isn't that a great vision?
It is such a beautiful vision.
It is, and it highlights the power of individual action.
It really does, yeah.
Even a small garden, when planted with the right species, can make a difference.
Totally.
You can actually register your own property on the Homegrown National Parks website
Oh,
and
really?
see what other people are doing in your area.
I love that.
Yeah.
So inspiring.
Yeah, it is.
The video also emphasizes like ongoing care and maintenance
Oh,
when
yes.
it comes to these native
Right.
gardens.
It's not a set it and forget it.
Right. It's not like a house plant
No, it's not like a houseplant.
where you can just leave it for a month and come back and it's fine.
Right.
It does require attention and care.
It does.
Yeah.
But the rewards are well worth the effort.
So what are some things people need to do?
Well, watering, controlling invasive species,
Oh, yeah, good point.
even learning about techniques like controlled burns for larger gardens.
Wow.
It's all part of the journey.
It really is. You're constantly learning and evolving as you take care of these little ecosystems.
You are.
And speaking of learning, before we wrap up this part of our deep dive,
Yes.
I'm curious about the ethical considerations,
Oh, yeah.
especially when it comes to sourcing native plants.
Yes, a very important topic.
What do we need to keep in mind?
Well, it's really important to remember that while we want to bring the beauty and the benefits of native plants into our gardens,
Right?
we need to do so responsibly.
Of course.
That means respecting those wild populations
Right.
and making sure that our actions don't harm those ecosystems.
So what does that look like, practically speaking?
Well, for starters, it means avoiding collecting plants from the wild.
Well, for starters, it means avoiding collecting plants from the wild.
Right.
So you're saying, like, don't go dig them up.
Exactly. It might seem tempting to dig up a beautiful wildflower that you encounter on a hike,
Oh, yeah.
but removing those plants from their natural habitat
Yeah.
can really disrupt the ecosystem,
Right.
and it can make those areas more vulnerable to invasive species.
It's like you're taking a piece of a puzzle out.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah, and then it's just not complete anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
And, it's about understanding that each plant plays a very specific role
Right.
in its environment.
Yeah.
Removing it can have cascading effects that we might not even fully understand.
Wow.
And, a lot of times those wild collected plants might not even thrive in a garden setting.
Right, because they're already used to where they are.
Exactly. They're adapted to very specific conditions in their natural habitat.
Right.
Plus, ethically sourced plants from reputable nurseries are usually grown in ways that benefit the environment and
Okay.
support conservation efforts.
That makes a lot more sense. So what are some other ways that we can protect those wild populations as we're creating these gardens?
Well, another important consideration is genetic diversity.
Okay.
When we collect seeds or plants from the wild, we risk introducing genetic material
Okay.
that might not be well suited to a particular location,
Okay.
or could even hybridize with local populations and
Duh.
potentially weaken their resilience.
Wow.
So it's not just about whether a plant is native to a region,
Right.
it's also about ensuring that it's genetically appropriate for that specific location.
It's like a microclimate almost.
Exactly. It's about respecting those natural variations
Yeah.
that exist within species and understanding that those variations contribute to the overall health and adaptability
Right.
of those plant populations.
So again, sticking with those reputable nurseries
Yes.
that are sourcing locally.
Absolutely.
That's key.
Yeah. And look for nurseries that are following those ethical and sustainable practices.
Yes.
Like collecting seeds from local populations and avoiding the use of pesticides and herbicides that could harm beneficial insects.
You don't want to undo all your hard work.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's about being mindful of like the entire process from seed to garden.
It is.
And the video talked about the rule of thirds.
Oh, yes.
When it comes to collecting seeds.
Yeah.
So can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So the rule of thirds is a great guideline
okay.
for ethical seed collection.
Okay.
It suggests taking only a third of the available seeds.
Okay.
Leaving a third for the plant to reproduce naturally.
Okay.
And another third for wildlife.
So everybody gets a fair share.
Exactly.
I love that. And speaking of sharing, the video also emphasizes educating others.
Oh, yes.
About the benefits of native plant gardening.
Yes, we can all be ambassadors for native plants.
I love that. Yeah.
Spreading the word about their beauty, their ecological importance.
Yeah.
And the joy that they bring to our lives.
And sometimes I feel like just seeing a really beautiful, thriving garden is enough to like spark someone's interest.
It is. It's visual storytelling.
It is.
And you can share your knowledge and your enthusiasm.
Right.
Maybe tell a neighbor about a fascinating fact you learned about a plant.
Yeah.
Explain how your garden is attracting butterflies and birds.
Yeah.
Or even offer to share some seeds or cuttings.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah. It's about planting those seeds of inspiration.
Literally and figuratively.
Yes.
I love it. And speaking of inspiration, the video talked about using Osage orange trees to create living fences.
Oh, yes. That's a fascinating topic.
It is.
You know, Osage orange trees produce those large, spiky fruits that we call hedge apples.
Yes.
And they were traditionally used to create these dense, thorny hedges that acted as natural fences.
Really?
Yeah. They provided shelter for wildlife,
oh, well,
helped control erosion, and even served as windbreaks.
Wow. That's amazing. Like working with nature.
It is. It's incredible.
Could it create these really beautiful, functional landscapes? And I would imagine those living fences would be so beneficial for wildlife.
Absolutely.
Creating those corridors and connections.
Yes, they're much more ecologically friendly
yeah.
than traditional fences, which often fragment habitats.
Right, they separate everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
And isolate populations.
Are Osage orange trees still used for this today?
They are.
Really?
There's a renewed interest in using them for living fences, hedgerows, windbreaks.
Oh, wow.
Especially, you know, among those who are interested in sustainable agriculture and permaculture.
Okay.
The video even mentioned a guide from Mother Earth News.
Oh, cool.
On how to grow your own Osage orange hedge.
I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah. It's a great resource.
That's so cool.
It's a fantastic project.
Yeah.
That really blends practicality with ecological benefits.
So we talked about all these benefits, but I'm sure there are some challenges.
Oh, of course.
To native plant gardening.
Yeah.
The video brought up the deer.
Oh, yes.
Like, we want to attract all this wildlife. But then the deer come in, they're like, thanks for the buffet.
I know, right? It's this constant battle.
It is.
It can be so frustrating to see your hard work nibbled away by hungry deer.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are ways to manage this.
Okay, good.
Without resorting to harsh chemicals or completely fencing off your garden.
Okay. So what are some strategies that you found are helpful?
Well, for starters, choosing plants that deer find less palatable can help.
Okay.
For instance, rattlesnake master and wild quinine
okay.
are known to be deer resistant.
Okay.
So, you know, strategically placing those less tasty plants
right.
around the more vulnerable ones can create a natural deterrent.
Yeah. It's like, you don't want that go over there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, using physical barriers like deer netting can be effective.
Okay.
Especially when you're protecting young plants.
Right.
Until they get established.
Okay. Good to know.
So, you know, it's all about finding those creative ways to coexist.
Right.
Recognizing that we're sharing our space with these creatures.
Yeah.
And they have their own needs and roles to play in this ecosystem.
It's about finding that balance.
Right. Exactly.
And, you know, speaking of balance, I think the video also highlighted the interconnectedness between attracting butterflies.
Oh, absolutely.
And attracting birds.
Butterflies and moths are crucial food source.
Oh, yeah.
For a lot of bird species, especially during nesting season when they need to feed their hungry chicks.
All those babies.
Yes.
Yeah.
So by planting those native host plants that attract caterpillars,
Right.
we're essentially creating a natural bird feeder in our gardens.
Oh, wow. It's like a chain reaction.
It is.
Yeah, native plants attract caterpillars, attract birds, support the ecosystem.
That's
It all
on.
comes back around.
It
And it
does.
really shows how important diversity is
It is.
in our gardens.
You hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
A variety of native plants that bloom throughout the season
Right.
ensures a continuous supply of nectar
Right.
for those adult butterflies and moths, and a steady stream of caterpillars to feed those birds.
It's like you're making a buffet for wildlife.
Exactly. With something delicious on offer at all
I
times.
love it.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of delicious,
Yeah, those wild strawberries.
those wild strawberries,
Yeah.
not only are they tasty for us,
Right.
but they provide food for birds and other wildlife.
Yeah, they're great for everybody.
Yeah, a perfect example of how we can create gardens that benefit both people and nature.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we think about designing our native plant gardens,
Yeah.
it's important to consider not only what looks good,
Right.
but what's going to provide the most benefit to wildlife throughout the year.
So thinking beyond aesthetics
Yeah.
and embracing like the functionality of those plants,
Absolutely.
the video had some really great tips for creating visually appealing native plant gardens,
Yeah.
but still keeping those ecological benefits in mind.
Right. So it's not about just letting nature run wild.
Right.
We can incorporate design
Yeah.
principles that make the garden look intentional and well-maintained
Right.
while still showcasing the beauty of native plants.
Yeah, it should still look nice.
It should, you know, grouping similar species together,
Okay.
creating those borders and edges, layering plants of varying heights.
Right.
These are all ways to create a sense of order and purpose.
It's about finding that balance between wildness
Yes.
and intentionality.
Yes.
Yeah.
And sometimes striking that balance can help avoid misunderstandings,
Oh, yeah.
even from well-meaning neighbors.
Right.
The video shared a funny anecdote about a neighbor who mistook a native plant garden for a patch of weeds.
Oh, no.
I know.
Oh, that's
It
funny.
happens.
Yeah, I think we've all had those experiences where people just aren't used to seeing gardens
Right.
that aren't like perfectly manicured.
Exactly. And
Yeah.
have those exotic
Oh,
flowers.
right. Yeah. It's a shifting perception.
It is.
And as more people embrace this,
Yeah.
I think those perceptions will start to change.
I think so too. And that's where education and communication come in.
Absolutely. It's about sharing our knowledge, explaining why we're doing what we're doing,
Right.
and showcasing, the incredible diversity and beauty of
Yeah.
these native plant gardens.
It's like planting seeds of change, one conversation at a time.
I love that.
And we were talking about homegrown national parks before.
Yes.
It's such a powerful idea that, like, collectively,
Yeah.
if we all plant these plants in our yards,
Right.
we're creating this network of mini ecosystems.
Yes.
That could have a real impact.
It could.
Yeah.
Imagine that, a vast interconnected web of
I
habitat.
know, it's so beautiful.
I
Yeah,
know.
spanning across backyards and parks and everything. So
Yeah.
cool.
It really emphasizes the power of individual action.
It does, yeah.
You know, even a small garden, when planted with the right species, can become a haven for wildlife,
Yeah.
a source of clean water,
Wow.
and a testament to our commitment to a
Yeah.
healthier planet.
And the Homegrown National Parks website?
Is a great resource
It is.
to connect with other people who
Yes.
are passionate about this.
Yes. You can register your own property, see what others are doing in your area, and get inspiration.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And they also have a program
Yeah.
that allows people to certify their yards as wildlife habitats.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Organizations like the National Wildlife Federation
Okay.
and Wild Ones offer these certification programs that
Wow.
recognize homeowners who are creating these wildlife-friendly landscapes.
It's like a badge of honor for your garden.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, it's a great way to show your support and inspire others to do the same.
So as we wrap up this part of our deep dive,
Oh.
I'm curious to hear your thoughts on what we can do to continue learning and evolving
Yeah.
as native plant gardeners.
That's a great question, and I think it speaks to the heart of what it means to be a gardener,
Okay.
especially when we're working with native plants. Because I think when we're working with native plants, it invites us to engage with nature on a deeper level.
Yeah.
It's not just about the aesthetics.
Right.
It's about understanding those intricate relationships between plants and the soil,
All right.
the wildlife, and even the climate.
It's like becoming a student
Yeah,
of the ecosystem.
exactly.
Yeah.
And that learning process never really ends.
Who doesn't?
You know, there's always something new to discover.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's a new gardening technique that benefits pollinators,
Yeah.
or even just a deeper understanding of how our choices impact that web of life.
It's true.
Yeah.
So how can we like keep that learning process going?
Yeah.
The video mentioned like connecting with local chapters of organizations like Wild Ones,
Oh, absolutely.
which I think is a great place to start.
Yes, those local chapters are treasure troves of knowledge and camaraderie. You
Yeah.
know, they offer workshops, plant sales, garden tours, even mentorship opportunities.
Wow.
It's a fantastic way to connect with other passionate gardeners.
Right. Meet people who are like-minded.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Learn from experts and get inspired by seeing what others are doing.
Yeah. And I imagine those connections can also lead to a sense of community,
They do.
which is so important,
Yes.
especially when you're starting out.
It is.
Or even if you're not, you know, just having that community to support you.
It is. It's about sharing knowledge and experiences and
Yeah.
even seeds.
Yeah. Those plant swaps are so fun.
Oh, they are so much fun.
Yeah.
And it's a great way to expand your garden's biodiversity
Yeah.
and learn about new species that you might not have encountered before.
Totally.
Yeah.
So it's like you're creating this network of support and inspiration.
You are all centered around this passion for native plants.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the video also encouraged us to educate our neighbors and communities
Absolutely.
about native plants.
Yes. You know, sometimes a simple conversation can really spark a neighbor's curiosity.
Yeah.
Maybe you share a fascinating fact you learned about a plant that you're growing.
Yeah.
Explain how your garden is like buzzing with pollinators.
Yeah.
Offer to share some seeds or cuttings.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it's about planting those seeds of inspiration.
Literally and figuratively.
Yes. It's amazing how even a small gesture can plant a seed of inspiration in someone's mind.
Yeah.
And as more people embrace these native plants, you know, those individual actions create this ripple effect
Right.
that transforms entire neighborhoods and communities.
It's about shifting perceptions one garden at a time
It is.
and showing people that beauty and ecological benefit
Yes.
can go together.
I love that. And, you know, leading by example is often the most effective way to inspire others. When people see a beautiful, thriving native plant garden,
Yeah.
they're more likely to ask questions
Right.
and want to learn more.
It's like an
It
invitation
is a visual invitation.
to engage with nature in a different way and
Yes.
thinking about those larger scale impacts, like
Right.
homegrown national parks.
Yes.
It's so cool, this idea of creating this network of mini ecosystems across the country.
It is. It's such a hopeful vision.
Yeah.
You know, if enough people embrace this idea,
Yeah.
we can create this mosaic of habitat
Yeah.
that supports biodiversity on a scale we've never seen before.
Wow. Yeah, that would be amazing.
It would be.
It shows that even small individual actions,
Yes.
when we all do them together, can have a real impact.
That's true.
So, thinking beyond the garden,
Okay.
what are some things that we can do in our everyday lives
Yeah.
to support these native plants
Yeah.
and biodiversity?
It's all about recognizing that interconnectedness of our choices.
Okay.
For instance, when we're shopping for plants at a nursery, we can consciously choose native species.
Oh, yeah. Make the effort. Yeah.
Yes, over those exotic ones.
Okay, and I imagine like paying attention to where those plants are coming from is important too.
It is.
Right.
Look for those nurseries that specialize in native plants
Yeah.
and are committed to those ethical and sustainable sourcing practices.
Yeah, you want to make sure you're getting them from the right place.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm also thinking about the products we use in our gardens.
Right.
Choosing organic fertilizers and pest control methods
Oh, yeah.
can really help to protect those beneficial insects and the pollinators.
Yeah, because those conventional pesticides and herbicides can be
Yes.
really harmful.
They'd be devastating to those insect populations.
Right.
And those insects are essential for a healthy ecosystem.
They are.
Yeah.
So it's about making choices that support that web of life
Yes.
rather than disrupt it.
Exactly.
And even like simple things like reducing the size of our lawns
Well,
can make
yes.
a difference, right?
Lawns are ecological deserts.
Yeah, they're basically just grass.
They provide very little habitat or food for wildlife.
Yeah.
But by converting even a small portion of your lawn to native plants,
Okay.
you're creating valuable habitat and increasing that biodiversity.
Right, in your own backyard.
Yes.
Yeah, it's about challenging those conventional notions of what a yard should look like
It is.
and embracing something a little bit wilder,
Yeah.
more ecologically minded.
This has been such a great conversation.
It has.
We've explored the why, the what, and the how of native plant gardening.
We have.
We talked about the benefits, the design, and all the
There's still the
tips for
tips.
having success with it.
Yeah, and we've learned that native plant gardening is so much more than just a hobby.
Oh, definitely.
It's a way to connect with nature support, biodiversity,
Yeah.
conserve water, and create a sense of beauty and purpose in our own backyards.
Yeah, it's all about recognizing that we're a part of nature
Yes.
and not separate from it.
We are all connected.
And through our choices, we can create a world where both people and nature can thrive.
I love that.
That's the goal.
It is.
So as you continue on your native plant gardening journey, remember,
Yes.
every seed you sow, every plant you nurture is a step towards a more vibrant, resilient, and beautiful world.
So well said.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the world of native plant gardening.
Yes, thank you for having me.
We hope you learned something new, got inspired.
To take action and maybe even discovered a new passion?
It's such a rewarding hobby.
It is?
And remember, the learning never stops.
It doesn't.
Keep exploring, keep experimenting, and keep sharing your love of native plants with the world.
Happy gardening, everyone.
Happy gardening.